could be outlawed by the legislature, and this is what this bill attempts to do. We feel the bill does meet the test by finding as fact that the average content of a marijuana cigarette has from 10 to 20 times what it did 14 years ago. Recriminalization of marijuana has very, very broad support. There is a sheet of paper on your desk, and I apologize because this is by no means all the agencies and groups that have written in support of the bill. And there was no effort, Mr. President, to go and persuade people to send in the resolutions. I took notice this morning, North Star Borough School District's not on. My own Chamber of Commerce in Soldotna is not on. And so this is not an all-inclusive list. There is broad-based support, especially with youth groups. They feel that there's mixed signals out there, and they want to see it recriminalized, so we're all living by the same standards. And with that, Mr. President, the chairperson of Judiciary, who did an excellent job, I think, on testimony, and as far as the expert witnesses, I don't think we could have had any better expert witnesses than they provided. Thank you.
Senator Fakes.
Thank you, Mr. President. One of the previous speakers this morning said that the jury was still out. Mr. President, I contend to you the jury is not out. The jury came back in 1982, and four scientists, 1981 and 1982, is considered the turning point in the acquisition of evidence in the harmful effects of marijuana. During these years, several comprehensive studies were released, which revealed the medical evidence that had been collected to date, and it performed by the Scientific Council of the American Medical Association, a task force from the World Health Association, and the Addiction Research Foundation, and the Institute of Medicine of the National Academy of Sciences. It was concluded, beyond a doubt, that marijuana had a number of known or suspected chronic effects that posed a health hazard. As a result of these reviews, the Surgeon General issued his 1982 warnings on the health effects of marijuana use. These efforts are documented in SB 18's finding section. I would also note that the evidence has also continued to accumulate since 1982, and this evidence has all pointed more strongly to the harms of marijuana than has been known at the time of the Raven case. And I'd like to go over with you the Surgeon General's findings of 1982 when he issued a health warning to the people of the United States on the health effects of marijuana. He says marijuana is a major public health problem in the United States and has increased in the past 20 years. Its use has increased. It is estimated that now, and this is in 1982, and the numbers have increased since then, that a quarter of the American population has used it. And then he goes on and cites the five major medical and physiological agencies that have studied the effect of marijuana, and that their findings have all been conclusive, that acute intoxication with marijuana interferes with many aspects of mental functioning and has serious acute effects on perception and skill performance, such as driving and other complex tasks involving judgment of fine motor skills. And then the Surgeon General went on to say that the following are the suspected or known chronic effects of marijuana. Number one, short-term memory impairment and slowness of learning. Number two, impaired lung function, similar to what's found in cigarette smokers. Indications are that more serious effects, such as cancer and other lung diseases, following extensive use in marijuana than in cigarette smoking. Number three, decreased sperm count and sperm mobility. A lot of studies have now centered on the problems of the reproduction organs of both males and females with marijuana use. Number four, interference with ovulation and prenatal development. Number five, impaired immune response. There have been additional studies, and I can talk about it more, that have shown there may be a correlation between AIDS and marijuana use, that one may have helped the other because marijuana use is shown to really reduce the immune system in the body. Number six, possible adverse effects on heart function. Number seven, byproducts of marijuana remaining in the body fat for several weeks with unknown consequences. The storage of these byproducts increases the possibilities for chronic as well as residual effects on performance even after the acute reaction to the drug has worn off. This is when we know the high is gone, the reaction of the body, the slow reaction rate, the slow eye-hand coordination is still there long after the high has been worn off. Of special concern, and I continue on with the Surgeon General's warning of 1982, of special concern are the long-term developmental effects in children and adolescents who are particularly vulnerable to the drug's behavioral and psychological effects. The anti-motivational syndrome, characterized by a pattern of energy loss, diminished school performance, harmed parental relationships, and other behavioral disruptions, has been associated with prolonged use in marijuana by young persons. Although more research is required, recent national surveys report that 40% of heavy users experience some or all of those symptoms that I mentioned. The Surgeon General of the United States continues to be very concerned about the health risks of marijuana. More is being found out every day, and his warnings are even more severe today than they were in 1982. Let's go on to compare Alaska youth with national youth. We are very fortunate to have a scientist at the University of Alaska Anchorage that is doing some studies in the use of marijuana between our high school youth and the youth of the lower 48. And this will show you that it has been shown in both Oregon and California when marijuana use was decriminalized, the use in the children increased, and it has done so in Alaska also. In 1982, 47.4% of Alaska youth ages 12 through 17 had tried marijuana. In the lower 48, it was 26.7%. So you had 47.4% to 26.7%. Of high school seniors, you had 70% of Alaskan high school seniors had tried marijuana, where 58% of national high school seniors had tried marijuana. And this study was updated in 1988. And in 1988, the statistics are improving slightly. In the United States, in the lower 48, of the statistics in high school seniors have gone from 58% marijuana use down to 50%. And in the state of Alaska, we've had a very slight decrease from 70% to 68%. Unfortunately, the use has gone to harder drugs like cocaine. So you have a situation where Alaska youth are using not only marijuana but hard drugs even more. And in the testimony in the Senate Judiciary Committee, it was said that the reason for that was marijuana is legal. If the government says it's legal, it can't be bad for you. And we heard that over and over and over. And when, again, it is very bad for you. It is very, very dangerous and bad. What we had was a series of medical experts, the presiding officer and several people from the Department of Law, says that you can beat this. You can recriminalize marijuana, but you have to go through the findings very, very carefully, and you must give specific public health hazards to the use of marijuana and to the public health in order to justify getting around that privacy clause of the Constitution. So we went to the experts. We went to physiologists. We went to folks that are medical doctors. We went to scientific research. And what we found is that you have an organization out there called NORMAL, and that's the National Organization of Reform of Marijuana Bills. And many of the doctors that they have testified, and one of them was a Dr. Greenspan from Harvard that the downtown senator mentioned, is not a medical doctor. He has not published one report, one scientific report on the use of marijuana or the chemical use of it or the physiological research on marijuana. He is one of those doctors that testify over and over for decriminalization of marijuana. He's one of three that they use. But none of the three have ever documented or published scientific evidence in the physiological aspects or the chemical aspects and the habitual addiction of marijuana. He's a psychiatrist. He's not a pharmacologist or a researcher that does these kinds of things. And when the House Health and Social Services Committee did this, it was very interesting to note that their experts were mainly the NORMAL doctors, the doctors who wanted to decriminalize marijuana, and they didn't go to the body of scientific information from the University of Washington that's doing a lot of studies, from UCLA, from Yale University, from the University of Paris, that huge body of scientific evidence that the Surgeon General quotes and that other research agencies are quoting to show the harmful effects of marijuana. And there's a recent study that's just out from the University of Washington that I think is very, very interesting. And the reason the findings are may and could is we wanted to understate the findings. We didn't want to make these big pronouncements. And if anything, the medical doctors who all testified before our committee said we had understated the findings, that the findings could have been much stronger and that there's documented evidence to make very, very strong findings. But we wanted to take the middle of the road on those findings, and we wanted to be reasonable, and we didn't want to be considered totally out of kilter on this thing. So we tried to make the findings reasonable, and we tried to make the findings conservative. But what they've just come up with are several recent studies, and the studies that we're quoting are all 1985, 1984, 1986 studies. is they have done a series of studies at the University of Washington on fetal alcohol syndrome. And we've all heard the problems of fetal alcohol syndrome in the Native community in the state of Alaska. We know that fetal alcohol syndrome occurs 6 times above the national average in the state of Alaska than it does anywhere else in the lower 48. They are now connecting fetal alcohol syndrome babies with marijuana, that babies that are born whose mothers are addicted to marijuana look the same, have the same problems, have the same visual effects, have the same physical head shapes. And now they're thinking, and again, the jury is out on this one, but they're seeing a linkage between marijuana use and alcohol that creates fetal alcohol syndrome, because the point is made that alcohol has been around for centuries. But fetal alcohol syndrome has only been around for 20 years. What's different? Marijuana use. And because those babies whose mothers are addicted in marijuana look the same, they're thinking there's some linkage now that it may not be just alcohol that's creating fetal alcohol syndrome in babies. It could be the use of alcohol and marijuana, marijuana being the stimulus that's creating this terrible, terrible problem in the newborns of particularly our native population up here. They have a lot of current studies. They did an interesting one that I want to tell the body. I don't want to belabor this. I know we all have meetings to go to and other things to do, but they made a point. The drug advisor for the National Football League testified at length to the committee, and he said, you know, there's no marijuana use in professional sports. Very little. There are steroids and there's cocaine. There's no marijuana use because a joint smoked on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday, there's no doubt in that player's mind he cannot catch the football or hit the ball or catch the ball as well on Saturday and Sunday. And they've proven it over and over and over to these professional athletes, and they do not use marijuana because of the eye-hand coordination that joint will do to that athlete later on in the week. They have not been able to approve them that same problem with cocaine or steroids. And steroids are a bigger problem than anything else because of the burst of physical energy they get. But marijuana use is almost non-existent because of the eye-hand coordination, the physical side effects that they exhibit and have exhibited on the weekends. Basically, it's a money issue with them. They don't smoke marijuana because they aren't as good at their sport on the weekends, and it'll cost them money. They'll get thrown out of the game, or they'll leave the team. They won't be able to perform as well. And I think that is really significant for anybody who thinks that marijuana doesn't affect the body or doesn't have harmful effects. They have done a lot of work on the immune system now with marijuana, how it breaks it down, how marijuana users are more prone to colds, more prone to allergies, more prone to diseases, and there may be a connection now with AIDS. Again, AIDS is a relatively new disease. Marijuana has just been around for a couple of decades. They are beginning to link up. There may be a possibility there. And the studies are coming out of the studies at UCLA and San Francisco State that have large populations that are affected with AIDS. And they're seeing a correlation. Remember, it took them 60 years to determine, without a doubt, that prolonged tobacco use causes cancer in the lungs. Marijuana hasn't been around that long in the United States. There hasn't been that many studies to document that, but the documentation for marijuana is overwhelmingly towards the health hazard. It's overwhelmingly ahead of where they were in 20 years of documentation with tobacco. And what I've done, Mr. President, is I've listed each finding, and I've listed the cases and the sightings and the health effects that are known with each finding, and I will do that and go through that if each member would like me to.
Further discussion? Senator Szymanski.
Thank you. I don't want to delay the debate, and in effort not to do that, what I'd like to do is go back to the discussion related, probably now more appropriate on the third reading, the fiscal note, and I was planning on just waiting, passing the bill, and then bringing up a separate motion to adopt the department's fiscal notes, and rather than go through that exercise, let me just go back to the fiscal note question and point out my concern with it, in that I think that there's probably no question that we're going to pass the legislation before us, but I think that the Department of Corrections advanced a fiscal note that probably should be taken care of by this body. If there's anybody that really disputes the fact that we're going to have, under their analysis, up to 300 prosecutions, which 80% they're estimating to have positive convictions on, if there's anybody that really disputes that whether or not we're going to sentence to jail 50% of 240, which is probably realistic, and the fact that we're looking at an average stay in jail of about 30 days if we have these prisoners incarcerated, which turns out to about 3,600 prison days, or person days, I guess, the fiscal note comes out to 108,000. So it seems to me that unless somebody disputes that there are going to be no impact, somebody wants to stand up and say that there is no impact, there will not be any prosecutions, there will not be any increased prisoner load, it seems to me it would be only appropriate to pass a fiscal note that deals with that. The Department of Law had a similar fiscal note, and the previous dissertation by the distinguished judiciary chairman was foundation to defend a law. It wasn't necessarily for all our benefit, but as much as the record's benefit to defend a law that eventually is going to be challenged. And as we're all aware of, there have been cases where individuals actually went and purposely allowed themselves to be arrested. And I predict that the day after this bill is signed into law, that you're going to see identical thing happen. People are going to purposely be arrested. There's going to be a challenge. And I think then you have to look at the fiscal note the Department of Law put forth. And I think they were honest with us. I think that they were very honest with us when they advanced it to us in judiciary, that the cost of defending the new law against constitutional challenges is real. Is there anybody in their mind, right mind in this room that doesn't believe that we're going to have a constitutional challenge? I can't dispute the Department of Law, because that's what we did this whole exercise about. Extensive public hearings, extensive debate, to set a record, to prepare for a challenge, and to not fund the financial resources to deal with the challenge when the Department of Law tells us that's what they need doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I can only, plead to my body here, the members here, that we've got some fiscal notes here. The impact's going to be there. And whether or not we attach fiscal notes or the other body attaches the fiscal notes, eventually there's going to be a fiscal impact. It just seems to me it's responsible to do that. And where do we stop? If we decide today, because it's nice to zero out fiscal notes because we like a bill, or we decide to put on fiscal notes because we don't like a bill, we're going against what the judiciary chairman and many others in this body said earlier, that we should not play political shenanigans with fiscal note process, that we should be as reasonable and responsible as possible in deliberating and passing legislation. Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Porchel.
Mr. President, I'm not going to stand on this floor and debate the health effects of marijuana, or the non-health, or at all contend that marijuana is good for people and that there are no adverse impacts. I think I will have to restate what I said earlier, in that the evidence is quite mixed. And, of course, everybody quoting their own case, as Senator from the Hillside has done, uses their experts, and the other side, whether it's normal or whoever, uses their experts. I don't. I guess that's the kind of debate that will be played out if this bill takes effect in law, and it will be played out in the courtroom, and people will be parading forth their experts on various health impacts. But I would commend to the body our House Research report of April 4th, 1988 by Carla Hart, discussing findings both for and against health hazards of marijuana and comparison with alcohol and tobacco. I think that does at least demonstrate the complexity and the contradiction of the research on the topic. I would also commend to the body a reading of the testimony before the House Health Committee last year, which included a number of people, including Dr. Morgan, director of pharmacology program at the City University of New York Medical School. Suffice to say, there's conflicting testimony on this. It is not a clear topic. But let's take it another step further. Wonder if there's health hazards documented, which I don't find hard to believe, frankly, and wonder if they're approaching the severity of alcohol and tobacco. Again, Mr. President, I'd have to say, are we adopting a similar approach in law, in criminal law, for alcohol and tobacco? No, we're not. something that I haven't heard much on the floor that I expected more was mixed messages. That's a great political cliche. We're sending mixed messages. Mr. President, I would maintain that, yes, there are mixed messages being sent in our current statutory prohibitions and regulation on marijuana. There will also be mixed messages following passage of this bill. You have, in essence, with state and statute, that some drugs with known health impacts are legal and you can use them and you can go down to your local bar and get them. There are some drugs in our society that may have equal or less impacts that are not legal and you could go to jail for. We have some prohibitions, like on marijuana, which we want on the books, but we don't really care if we enforce them or not. That's a great message to send, unenforceable or non-enforceable laws. And then you always have the problem between youth and adults. The message here, remember, is geared to adults. I mean, we're saying adults in their home cannot possess small quantities of marijuana. That's the message. Somehow we kind of get that confused with who else we're talking to. But in our society and in our the way we do our laws, it's not unusual to discriminate, if you will, of different laws applying to adults than children. We don't allow people under the age of 17 and under to go to X-rated movies in our society. Yet children see their adults going to X-rated movies. We don't have children in combat situations. We don't allow children to vote. I mean, you can go right down the list. It is not at all unusual or inappropriate in our society that we have different standards of conduct for adults than we do children. Any person in this room that has a child will undoubtedly have experienced the situation of, well, how come you guys get to do this and not me? I mean, that's life. I mean, that's the way our society is, and you're always going to have those situations. I don't think it is necessarily contradictory to say that adults can possess small amounts of marijuana in their home and children aren't allowed to under law, which is the current situation. It's illegal for children to possess marijuana. So, Mr. Speaker, without going through some of the points that were made earlier, I remain opposed to this legislation. I frankly don't think that the ultimate aim is going to be accomplished, which is curbing the use of marijuana or other drugs in our society through prohibition. I don't think that works. We do know something about what does work, though. Again, as evidence in the tobacco situation, as bad as tobacco use is in our society, it is going down. Experts tell us that it's going down because of an education and a prevention program orientation that we've taken in our society, where more and more people at younger age are being taught that tobacco use is harmful and it's not a glorious or romantic thing to emulate by watching people older than you smoke. And I think there's been some success in that. And similarly, marijuana use is a problem, but there are more effective ways of getting at that, including prevention and education. That's where we ought to be putting our emphasis, not on this type of legislation. And I'll be real curious, Mr. President, to see the budget within our SOTA division of Health and Social Services this year, to see if we are going to increase drug and alcohol prevention services and programs and grants. My suspicion is no. We haven't done it in the last several years. I suspect we will again not put our money where we indeed need to be making it.
Senator Fakes.
Thank you, Mr. President. I need to just reiterate for the body one more thing. The report that the previous speaker referred to on the House Research Agency was based on the old marijuana bill, a different set of findings. A lot of those findings were questionable, and there wasn't documented evidence for them. Every single finding listed in this bill has a battery, a case of information and documentation and medical evidence behind it to prove that marijuana is a health risk. There is no doubt with these findings. There is no doubt in the medical evidence with these findings. There were doubts and there were findings in the previous bill that could not be documented without a shadow of a doubt. That is not the case in this particular one. The previous speaker talked about youngsters, youth, X-rated movies, different laws for adults and different laws for students or youth. And maybe that's the case. Maybe they don't have to go to an X-rated movie, but the X-rated movie isn't being shown in their home. Maybe they don't have to do some of the other things, but it's not in their home. If there's marijuana being grown in the home, if there's being marijuana used in the home, Where is that child supposed to go? Is the parent supposed to say, go out on the street, kid, while I smoke my joint? It's different standards here. The child learns by the behavior and the activities of the adult figurehead in their lives. If that figurehead or that adult is saying that marijuana use in the home is okay and it's legal, then it's okay for that use too. And that's where they're picking up these habits. They're picking it up in the home. And then it's being reinforced in school. So the previous speaker brought up the sending of the message. You bet that's a message when we say it's okay in the home. Most of the people who testified, not most, but a high percentage of the folks that testified in the Judiciary Committee said their first joint came from their parents or their older brother or sister or their uncle in the home. It's a very dangerous place to legalize a very dangerous drug.
Further discussion, Senator Jones.
Mr. President, I heard some talk about mixed messages on the use of marijuana. Having sat through four hearings last year in the Hess Committee on this subject, and having kept up with the hearings that have been going on this year, I don't believe there's any mixed message, not for myself. I know from the information I've received that it's a serious enough injury to the health to override the right to privacy issue. And there's no mixed message from my district either. In the poll I conducted just in the past few weeks, answering that question, 68% of the people in my district want to see marijuana recriminalized. 64% go so far as favoring a constitutional amendment in case this issue is tested in court. So I think that's a pretty strong message, not mixed at all, not from my district. Thank you.
Senator Halford.
Thank you. Just for the record, from the Judiciary Committee, I believe that the testimony we heard, the information we had, is certainly adequate to prove beyond a reasonable doubt to me that marijuana use is a significant threat to the public health.
Senator Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to support the bill. I'd also like to respond to the member from South Anchorage who continues to bring up the fiscal note question again. And I'd like to reiterate that the Department of Corrections did not have a fiscal note to present to the Senate Finance Committee. And by doing so, evidently they didn't particularly care so much about the bill because they were not prepared before they came before the Senate Finance Committee. So in the future, if people want to get these things included, I think they should be there and in front of the committee and have things ready ahead of time. In this case, they did not.
Further discussion on Senate Bill 28. Senator Fahrenkamp.
Mr. President, there's been a lot of discussion about mixed messages and fiscal notes. There have been, and this is not the first bill that we've ever passed on this floor without funding it. And to me, that's a farce and a mismatch. A very bad message that we're sending out to the public. If we are willing to take from the adults of this state and, you know, all this stuff about marijuana being bad, nobody disagrees with that. Nobody is on this floor advocating drug use or supportive of drug use. And there's no one that doesn't say that drug use is bad. I'm a living example of the cigarettes. And I'd hate to mention how many of us could talk about other liquid drugs, maybe like a beer now and then. But to me, we're sending a very bad message when we pass legislation and do not include fiscal notes and cut out any money that's there for enforcing it, and then say there's not going to be any arrest or anybody going to jail for it. To me, that's a farce, and it's a farce on the public, and that I can't support.
Further discussion on Senate Bill 28. Question before the Senate. Is shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 18 Judiciary pass the body? Members may proceed to vote. Has any failed to vote? Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change her or his vote? Secretary will record the vote. And so committee substitute for Senate Bill 18 Judiciary passes the Senate by a vote of 16 yeas and 2 nays. Senator Halford.
I ask unanimous consent to the roll call and final passage of committee substitute for Senate Bill 18 Judiciary be considered the roll call and the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Madam Secretary. Senator Porcheau.
I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration for my vote of CS for Senate Bill 18 Finance.
Reconsideration is given on Senate Bill 18.
Senate Joint Resolution Number 30.
Senator Halford.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent we revert to introduction of guests.
Without objection, revert to introduction of guests.
Thank you, Mr. President. In the far gallery, we have Steve Shropshire, Rod Bradley, and Tammy Bradley from the Anchorage Chamber.
Senate Joint Resolution Number 30 by Senators Curtula and Zemanski relating to location of a Job Corps Center within the Matanuska Sitna Bureau. State Affairs Committee considered the resolution. A majority of the committee recommends due pass. The report was signed by Senator Pershaw, Chairman, concurring. Senators Fakes, Kelly, and Ewing. Senator Adams signed no recommendation. 2-0 fiscal notes attached. Rules Committee considered the resolution and recommends calendaring. The report was signed by Senator Strzelewski, Chair, concurring. Senators Kelly and Curtula.
Are there any amendments?
Amendment number one by Senator Kelly, page 1, line 27, has been distributed.
By Senator who?
Excuse me, Senator Curtula.
Senator Curtula.
Mr. President, the amendment's on your desk, and I move adoption of the amendment.
Are there any objections? Without objection, the amendment is adopted.
Right here, excuse me. The amendment, Mr. President, apparently one person doesn't have it, maybe others don't, and I apologize if you don't. It's merely to insert the Honorable Daniel Inouye, U.S. Senator. As you know, Senator Inouye was here a year ago, and or less, and put considerable, he gave the emphasis to this program in this state, and we want to keep in contact with him on the subject. He has had continuing contact with Matsu Borough.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the amendment? Without objections, the adoption is, amendment is adopted. Senator Halford?
Unanimous consent that Senate Joint Resolution 30 amended be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, place in final passage.
Without objection, Senate Joint Resolution 30 is in third reading.
Senate Joint Resolution Number 30 amended relating to location of a Job Corps Center within the Matanuska Sitna Bureau.
Any discussion? Senator Curtula.
Mr. President, the administration has supported the proposal to have the Job Center. The resolution is very simplistic. In the Matanuska Valley, there are, I understand now, there is funding for five regional centers. There is funding for four centers, there are five proposals. So Alaska has a pretty good chance. Matanuska Sitna Borough has the buildings and the facilities. The administration supported that location. It's close to the population center and the rail belt, but also has the basic facilities and can do the job. An Alaskan Job Corps Center will generate 50 or 60 jobs, will leverage over $3 million in federal construction funds, and will bring in over $3 million federal operating funds into Alaska on an annual basis. The Department of Labor, the federal representatives, have a number of times visited the sites in the Matsu and have chosen two of them. Colony Schools or Wasilla High School are their favorites. Again, the facilities are there. The Matsu Borough is very interested in participating. The location is adequate and, in fact, very handy to the better part of the population centers of the valley, and it keeps us from having to send out, as we presently do, about 250 youth are enrolled in an out-of-state facilities program relating to Job Corps. I strongly endorse and hope the Senate will endorse this letter, which parallels the interests of the administration and the federal government.
Senator Fakes?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I support this. I think the Matsu Valley has done a good job in being very aggressive in going out there and trying to get the support of the federal government in these Job Corps centers that are going to be built in the United States and getting one for Alaska. But we were told in state affairs that there was a cost to the state for this, that it was a matching situation. And I believe in state affairs testimony, and the chairman might be able to help me here, that there was a $1 million capital amount of money required for this thing, and the federal government would match it $3 and $3.5 million, which is a good deal. But, and I think the committee report from state affairs was to ask for an updated fiscal note and a fiscal note that reflected the $1 million required to do this. And under testimony, it was also my understanding the folks from the Matsu Valley felt that this was going to be in the governor's submission on a capital budget, and the source of the funds was going to come out of Rail Belt Energy. So I'm just wondering if there could be an elaboration of this and maybe just some of the pieces filled in.
Senator Pershaw.
Thank you, Mr. President. The former speaker is right that we did have a discussion of trying to get a fuller picture of the general fund requirements for this. I would first say, though, that it was it was not the intention to alter the fiscal note on the resolution. The resolution can actually stand by itself as just calling upon the selection of the Job Corps Center. I guess after reflection and looking at all the costs, I would agree with the zero fiscal note on the resolution itself. However, in order to sweeten the pie or should we be selected, clearly there is a need for a facility to house the Job Corps Center from which the Job Corps Center should operate. And it was our understanding in going back to the governor that the governor, in a separate piece of legislation, is requesting $1 million in capital funds to match approximately another $1 million in federal funds for facility improvements, and they're looking at a couple of sites in the Mat Valley that might be appropriate for that. Debate on that appropriation clearly is yet to come.
Senator Szymanski.
Thank you. I couldn't pass up the opportunity. I just wanted to pass the word on to the senator from the Hillside. Fiscal note speaks for itself. Like on the previous bill, marijuana, it was zero fiscal note, it's zero. This says zero, it's zero. It doesn't make any difference, does it?
Any further discussion on Senate Joint Resolution Number 30 as amended? Senator Curtula.
I think Senator Pochot has expressed it correctly. The administration has written me personally and written down that they do have a request in. They have a separate piece of legislation in which the request is embodied, but they also are committed to the site and committed to funding through a different piece of legislation. This is merely asking the federal government to make the selection.
Further discussion? Senator Coghill.
Mr. President, I plan on supporting the resolution, but I understand that there are other sites in Alaska that also that the administration is looking at. And one of them is the Canole Pipeline Camp at Polk. And I believe that there's another one on the Kenai Peninsula that they're looking at. And I'm wondering if we, in doing this resolution, are not narrowing our options to those others. And I will certainly find out where those other the other site locations are. And we may have to and need to adopt another resolution also.
Senator Curtula.
Yes, the administration has endorsed the site in Mat-Su. The federal government has been looking at it several times, come down to those two particular areas there. The administration also has endorsed it by virtue of including $1 million and a one-line notation to me personally that this is a fact. And I have the information, and of course the bill has been introduced. That is, that the Mat-Su site has been one selected.
Senator Halford.
Yeah, I just had a question, and I didn't know that this was the case, if it is the case, but I didn't realize that the Mat-Su borough has the highest unemployment rate in the state. And I just wonder if that is consistent with what other people think of unemployment rates. I didn't realize that Mat-Su borough had the highest unemployment rate in the state.
Senator Cotillo.
Then my understanding that is the case, and of course you measure. You don't measure certain hunting and gathering activities. You measure those that have been in, quote, salary jobs and so on. And this has been the case for some 2 or 3 years. It's been the case during our recent election campaign, I can tell you also. And that's Department of Labor statistics, as I understand it. Mat-Su has been cited continually as the central area of unemployment. Again, that's the type of unemployment that's related directly to salaries, jobs, and so on, not to self-employment type situations that do occur in certain Bush communities that have tremendous unemployment also, but it's a different measure of unemployment.
Further discussion? Senator Jarrah.
Thank you, Mr. President. The senator from Eagle River brought up a good point, and that was a point that I was very much concerned with as well, that the whereas clause that addressed the unemployment, and we've certainly had much debate about this over the last several years regarding the way of determining unemployment statistics around the state, and I can certainly say that probably there are many other areas of the state that have a much higher unemployment rate. Just because you don't have a job from 8 to 5 there that you can go in and then all of a sudden you lose that and you become unemployed, that's not the basic criteria that we would certainly like to see used. And I guess I have some serious problems with the way it is worded that this area does have the highest unemployment rate in the state. I would feel more comfortable if said that if this area had one of the highest unemployment rates of the state, but certainly not the highest, because we do have other areas in this state that are that have a much higher unemployment rate than Mat-Su, and I guess that's one of the basic major concerns I have with this.
Senator, we'll stand at ease. Senator Jaroff. Senator Jaroff, we'll need a motion to move back to second reading for a specific amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move and ask unanimous consent that we move back to second reading for a specific amendment.
Without objection, we return to second reading. Senator Jaroff.
Thank you, Mr. President. The amendment number two should be on your desks here, and it's pretty self-explanatory. On page one, line 21, between the words, or between has and the, that we would insert one of, and then on line 22, we would delete rate and insert rates.
Have you moved the amendment?
I'd move the amendment.
Is there any objection to the adoption of the amendment? Without objection, amendment number one is adopted. Amendment number two is adopted. We're back in third reading. Further discussion on the bill? Senator Fakes.
Have some explanation. I believe there's going to be 250 students that are lodged in this facility, housed and trained in this facility. It's a great program, and I think the success rate is very, very good. But will that affect the school foundation formula? Will there be educational credits that will be required in this bill? I believe we had testimony on this also.
Senator Cotulla.
Mr. President, my understanding is Matt Subaru would be the general contractor, and the funds from the federal government would pay for all the costs of program. They are hopeful that setting up certain shop facilities that the Mat-Su area students, particularly from the community college and maybe from the high school, could be allowed to use some of these surplus facilities that the federal government would have in there for welding, training in computers, and so on. But it would be a positive thing, not a negative impact on the state's budget.
Further discussion. Question before the Senate. Shall Senate Joint Resolution 30, as amended, pass the body? Members may proceed to vote. All members voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change their vote? The Secretary will record the vote. So Senate Joint Resolution 30 passes the Senate by a vote of 18 yeas and no nays. Madam Secretary.
Citations honoring the Governor's Interim Commission on Children and Youth by Representatives Boyer, Ellis, Boucher, Brown, Davidson, Gruenberg, Navarre, Ulmer, Wall, Sawatka, Cotton, and Menard, Senators Fahrenkamp, Pershaw, Zemanski, Ewing, Sturzelowski, Binkley, and Pierce, honoring Elaine Hoover, Alaska's first Horatio Alger Award winner, by Representatives Hoffman, Boucher, Navarre, Senators Binkley, Zemanski, Sturzelowski, Halford, Pierce, and Fahrenkamp.
Senator Halford.
I move and ask unanimous consent to citations occurring on today's calendar be adopted by the Senate.
Without adoption, without objection, the citations are adopted. Unfinished business? Senator Adams.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent that I be excused from the call of the House on April 3rd for personal business.
Without objection, Senator Adams will be excused from the call of the Senate on April 3rd. Further unfinished business? Announcements. Under announcements, I'll remind the members that we're meeting at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Senator Pushaw.
President, in light of the hour, Senate State Affairs will meet at 2 o'clock today, not 1:30, at 2 o'clock today. We'll be taking up two bills, SB 28, and dealing with limit.
The Rules Committee, immediately following the adjournment in Senate Finance, I would appreciate it if we could be on hand. We have SCR 1, Fetal Alcohol Syndrome Week, SCR 14, the Alaska Railroad Suntrana Bridge, SJR 35, Veterans Administration Community Health, SB 171, relating to the school term, SB 198, cash limits, HB 114, Legislative Council review of court decisions.
Senator Lyson.
Mr. President, Labor and Commerce will meet this afternoon at the Belts Room at 3:30. We'll be taking up Senate Bill number 220, an act authorizing certain transmission lines. Senate Bill number 45, an act related to out-of-state solicitation for state contracts. Senate Bill number 56, an act related to state employment preference for service in the National Guard. Senate Bill number 58, an act related to the definition of Alaska bidder. And Senate Bill number 134, an act related to practice of acupuncture at 3:30 in the Belts Room.
Senator Fisher.
Thank you. I want to make note of a change. Instead of meeting at 3:30 today, the Senate House Committee will meet at 4 because of the time backing up to allow resources an extra half hour. We're going to be addressing again Senate Bill 136, the Education Trust Fund, Senate Bill 219, Birth Certificates, Children's Trust Fund, and also Senate Bill 163, PERS and TERS Credit for Part-Time Service.
Senator Fehrenkamp.
Thank you, Mr. President, and my sincere thanks to the Chairman of the Hess Committee for delaying his meeting in our behalf. I truly appreciate that. The Resources Committee will also delay until 2 o'clock due to the Rules Committee meeting, and we will be meeting in the Butchovich at 2 o'clock, taking up House Bill 8, which is Kachemak Bay, Senate Bill 42, the Marine Parks Bill, and getting a discussion of the fish and game mariculture regs.
Senator Adams.
Thank you, Mr. President. The first announcement is I'm hoping that the finance chairman will also send fiscal note blanks to each of the chairmen of subcommittees so we can fill those out properly. My first announcement is at 3:30 in Senate Finance. We will be meeting on Senate Bill number 15, which is the binding arbitration. We will this afternoon taking up the amendments, and then hopefully, even though, Mr. President, there's three votes against binding arbitration, the committee will act as statements and pass a bill out, even though we do have three votes against that, such as ELF. So we will be moving that bill, hopefully, out of committee this afternoon. And then at 3:30 tomorrow afternoon, we will be also taking up the rest of the bills that have been published on the schedule. Thank you.
Further announcements? Special orders? Senator Lyson.
Mr. President, I move and ask NAM's consent that I be given the privilege of the floor to speak about an event.
You have the floor, Senator.
Mr. President, I'm sure most of you in this body know my aide, Laura Fleming. If you've noticed her in the last few months, she has changed somewhat. And I'd like to announce that Laura Fleming Fisher and her husband, Fred, are the parents of a new 8-pound baby girl born at 9:30 this morning.
Mr. President, under announcements, thanks to the kindness of the Fairbanks Senator, we would have the Rules Committee in the Butchovich Room rather than Senate Finance immediately following.
Further special orders? Senator Halford.
Stand in adjournment until 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Without objection, Senate stands adjourned.